Okay, let's start with our motivation. So we're in a section of the text that is talking about the bodhisattva deeds. So bodhisattva is somebody who aspires to become a fully awakened Buddha so that they can have the capacity to be of the greatest benefit to all other living beings. So generating that aspiration for full awakening depends on a lot of causes and conditions. And one of them that is very important is seeing the disadvantages of the self-centered thought and the benefits of cherishing others. So doing that is a complete reversal from how we usually think, which is the benefits of cherishing myself and the disadvantages of taking care of others. So it's a complete reversal of how we've been thinking up until now. And so as we start to make that change, our self-centered thought can really fight back very strongly. And manifest as all sorts of grasping and craving and clinging and, you know, all of our little fits about when we don't get what we want and when we get what we don't want. So this is all to be expected. It's all normal when we start to really reverse this tendency to think primarily of ourselves and relegate others to second place. But even though it's normal for the self-centeredness to react like this, it's also very painful. And it can be confusing as well. So we need to have a certain kind of patience and kindness towards ourselves, but also to be very firm in the direction that we want to direct our mind. In other words, to stay centered on our heartfelt wish to become fully awakened Buddhas, and to stay centered on our incredible admiration for the bodhisattva's intention and their conduct and their deeds. So with that kind of firmness in our intention, even though we face the self-centered thought and all of its little shenanigans and big shenanigans, then let's cultivate that loving, compassionate, altruistic intention and have that as our motivation for listening to the Dharma this evening. I think all of us really sincerely aspire to become bodhisattvas and to have that attitude that cherishes others more than self, and highly admire the bodhisattvas for their aspiration and their deeds. Isn't that something that's important in your life? That you look up to them, and does it make you happy when you think of how the bodhisattvas are? No, like when we went through in Precious Garland, the 10 bodhisattva bhumis, didn't that make your mind happy? thinking, wow, there's some people who can actually do that. Even if I can't, there's some people who can. And someday I'll be able to. Yeah. So it's really something that's quite inspiring. You know, that. And then, you know, we really want to go in that direction. And then, of course, we have the day-to-day reality that we have a very self-centered mind, and that self-centeredness has been in place since beginningless time. Yeah, the aspiration to be a bodhisattva is new. The self-centeredness is very old. But we want the self-centeredness to vanish like that. Yeah. Wouldn't it be nice if all we had to do was just say, I'm finished being self-centered, and then it just goes away. Yeah. But, you know, something that's been in place since beginningless time is, you know, it's not going to roll over and say, you got me, you know. It's going to put up a good fight. So our self-centeredness does that, doesn't it? Yeah. Every day. We start out, we all generate bodhicitta in the morning, so inspired, and then the first thing we do in the day, self-centeredness pops up. Or the second, or the third, or the tenth, or the twelfth, yeah? And, you know, so sometimes we see the self-centeredness so often that we just get angry at it, you know? And we not angry at it, we get angry at ourselves. Yeah, getting angry at the self-centeredness is okay. That's not who we are. But we get angry at ourselves for being self-centered. Yeah. So then we go into, I'm so terrible, I'm so awful, I'm so selfish. What kind of bodhisattva am I ever going to become? I'm never going to become one. Woe is me, this is terrible. I might as well go drink a beer. You know, drown my troubles, go drink a beer, watch the news. Oh, but that's too awful too. How about a movie, a sci-fi movie? That'll be good for me. Yeah, anything to just escape from myself, because I'm so sick of this self-centered mind. And I'm so fed up with myself for being self-centered. Ever feel like that? Yeah? Like, I want to toss in the towel. Can't I have just a little bit of happiness? I mean, okay, you know, I know that the path is supposed to lead me to everlasting happiness, but can I have a little bit of happiness right now, too? This uprooting the self-centeredness is just, it's too painful. It's too much of a drag. I can't stand it. Yeah? So that's the actual self-centeredness talking right there. That's it. You know? Why are we in so much pain? Because the self-centeredness is our chief of staff. Yeah. What's his name? Privis got fired today. Yeah, he got fired. Yeah. But who cares? Self-centeredness is our chief of staff. We don't need Privis, you know. Do we? You know, self-centeredness, it takes charge. It runs the whole West Wing in our mind and the East Wing. Yeah, we have a Western part of ourselves and East part, North, West, South, Center. Yeah, self-centeredness runs the whole thing. Very efficient, very well organized. Yeah, and is totally successful in making us believe that it is truth. And therefore, in making us very miserable. Even when we try to oppose it, then instead of actually counteracting self-centeredness, we fall into self-centeredness booby trap, which is criticizing ourselves and telling ourselves what lousy practitioners we are because we're falling into it. Are you seeing how clever the self-centered thought is? It is astonishingly clever. Better than anything Putin can do, you know. Self-centeredness infiltrates everything. So it's can be quite difficult, but you know, what is it? We just keep on keeping on, don't we? You know, I mean, what else is there to do? Is there anything else to do? Okay, it's hard to get rid of self-centeredness. What's the alternative? Luxuriate in self-centeredness. Is that going to bring us happiness? We've done that already. That's why we decided to practice Dharma and try and counteract the self-centeredness, because we've luxuriated in it for so long and we're fed up with that. So there's no other choice but to change. Yeah, that doesn't mean we change right away. We change slowly, step by step. It's like when you go to India, okay? When you go to India, you have two choices. You either adjust to the way things are and are being done there, or you freak out and go back home. There's two choices, only two choices. Same with self-centeredness. Yeah, we either slowly chip away at it, or we just jump in and self-indulge. Okay, so we've done the self-indulgent chip already, haven't we? Yeah, haven't we? We could do a lot of skits about our self-indulgentship. That might be very interesting. Yeah. So, yeah, the only alternative is slowly chipping away at it, you know? And to say to ourselves as we do that, that's good enough, dear. That's what Lama Yeshe always told us. That's good enough, dear. You know, you don't have to be Buddha by next Tuesday. Just slowly, slowly, yeah? And that's good enough. So let's practice that. So we're in the part of the section on the Bodhisattva precepts that is talking specifically about the obstacles, how to eliminate obstacles to the ethical conduct of benefiting others. So this is an extremely practical session, a section of the Bodhisattva precepts, in which we can so clearly see our self-centeredness, because it talks about situations that come up very readily on a day-to-day basis, you know, in which, you know, self-centeredness just kind of takes over and runs the show. Okay, so we talked about, I think we're on number 40, right? So, yeah, so we talked about not helping those who are in need. We talked about avoiding taking care of the sick. We talked about not alleviating the suffering of others, and not explaining what is proper conduct to those who are reckless. And now we're on number 40, which is not relieving the sorrow of others, yeah, or not easing others' distress. Okay, so when people are very mentally worried and upset, yeah, if out of animosity we just do nothing to help them, then that is a transgression of this. Now, people are worried and upset most of the time. So, you know, does that mean that all we do all day is take care of everybody who's worried and upset? No. Here, this precept is talking specifically about two situations, okay? One is, if you've lost a loved one, okay, so you're grieving the loss of somebody that you're very close to, or you're grieving the loss of a significant amount of property, okay? So like losing your job, or your house got burned down by one of the fires, or, you know, a burglar came in and stole, you know, a significant amount of stuff from you. Okay, so something serious. It's not just the day-to-day stresses that and worries that other people have. Although, sure, if we can brighten somebody's day, you know, by helping them with a problem, let's do it. Yeah. But this precept is talking about more serious things. Yeah. Because otherwise, like I said, you know, it's like some people every day, you know, there's some new thing that they're worried and stressed about. And, you know, you can't micromanage somebody else's life. Okay, so here's the commentary. It talks about various categories of loved ones from whom, you know, the separation can be very painful. So parents or relatives, a spouse or a child, okay? People who are employees who are like part of the family, okay? Kind and loving friends and companions, and helpful spiritual teachers or even spiritual friends who have contributed to our spiritual development, you know, and people with whom we share those same Dharma values. So it can be, you know, very difficult when those people die, and there can be a significant grieving process going on. I should say, if you've done a lot of meditation about impermanence and death, then you've already imagined the passing away of many of these people, and you've made peace with that, and you've made peace with the people themselves. Because I think one thing that is difficult when somebody passes away is if we haven't made peace with them in our own mind, then they die and there's no more opportunity to do so. Yeah. And so then there's a lot of guilt and confusion and so on. So that really is, you know, a statement, an encouragement to apologize to whoever we feel we need to apologize to and forgive whoever we think we need to forgive, so that on a day-to-day basis our mind is calm. Yeah. And I would add into that also, you know, when we can stop the unrealistic expectations of people. Yeah. As long as we hold on to unrealistic expectations, then the relationship with them is very fraught. And when they die, it's the grieving process is quite difficult. Yeah. But when we really come to peace in our own heart with what a situation is and who a person is, yeah, and we accept that at a very deep level, then, you know, when they pass away or when we're about to pass away, the mind's much more peaceful. Okay. So separation from our property can also be difficult. So, you know, you invest in something and then it crashes, you know, like, I don't know what hedge funds are, but, or mortgages, you know, you all this thing that Wall Street does. So you invest in something like that, you trust somebody with your money and the whole thing crashes and falls apart. You know, that can be very difficult, like I said, because of a natural disaster or something like that. You know, you lose your property, you lose your home. So to really take care of people and alleviate their distress as much as we can. So here in our world, you know, the biggest group of people suffering from that are refugees. Yeah. When you think of what refugees have gone through in their life, often losing family members, losing their property, losing their human dignity even. Yeah. And if we can reach out and be of service and of benefit to those people, then it's very good, you know. And at least not you know, hate them, you know, at least have a neutral idea, a feeling, if you can't bring yourself to have compassion. But if we really think about other people's plight and we think of how we would be in that situation, then, you know, it's like we got to reach out and do something. Okay. So there are some exceptions for doing this. They're the same exceptions as for the 35th precept. So if we go back to that, the 35th precept was not going to help when it is needed, okay? So exceptions here to not helping people in distress are if we're sick, we're busy with something else that's important, we're occupied with very positive and beneficial spiritual practice, or we really lack the ability to be of benefit to them, okay? Or if helping them would be harmful to our Dharma practice or their Dharma practice, or it would be harmful to a large group of people and stir up a lot of turmoil, yeah. Or if it's better, sometimes for people's own spiritual growth, just, you know, they may be distressed, but you have to back away and just give them the time and space to figure it out themselves. So those are all situations in which it wouldn't be a transgression. Okay. Then 41 is not giving wealth to those who desire it. So this is involved with behaving badly towards the needy. Yeah, so here it is, not giving material possessions to those in need. Okay, so somebody wants food, drink, or other goods, and they ask for them in a respectful way, in an appropriate manner, but out of anger, or animosity, or jealousy, or arrogance, or some kind of strong klesha, we just say no. You know, I'm not going to give this to you. I don't want to share what I have. Forget it. Yeah. This is so sad, you know, because this is kind of an attitude that I see in the country nowadays, you know. And I also see a lot of people saying, no, this is not who we are as Americans. Yeah. But it saddens me when I see this kind of thing. Okay. Not that I am crystal clear, pure from this. Okay. So, you know, somebody asks for something and they need it, or even they don't need it so badly, but it's useful for them, but out of stinginess or anger or jealousy or whatever, we don't want to give them what they want. Okay. Now, does that mean that we give everybody everything that they do want? Okay. If it means that, then, for example, being kitchen manager is going to be hell, living in the hell realm. Yeah. Because if you have to give everybody everything they want on every single day, yeah, then you're just going to go crazy, yeah? And people are going to get more and more demanding. And, you know, isn't it part of their spiritual practice to learn to be content with what is served, you know, and make do with what they have? Isn't that part of the spiritual practice of training our mind? Okay. So it doesn't mean that you just go out of your way to give everybody everything they want, yeah, because that's really pretty ridiculous, isn't it? Yeah. And especially for people who are renunciants, yeah, then they should renunciate. Stop and renunciate. Yeah, so we should do that. So there's no transgression if we don't have the things that somebody is asking for have to to have. There's no fault in not giving something that would be harmful to the person in a present life, in the future life. Yeah, so if somebody asks you for booze or drugs or whatever, that is not kindness to give it to them. Okay, it's not a transgression if what the person asks us for would be injurious to the government or to the society at large. Yeah, so people ask you for weapons, they ask you for, to sign something that isn't the truth or, whatever. So we're not talking about doing underhanded things like that. Okay? And similarly, if giving something to someone would create conflict with the monastic precepts, so it would violate the monastic precepts, or it would... if not giving them something would actually be better for their spiritual practice. Okay? So somebody may get mad at you for not giving them what they want, but it may actually be better for them for their spiritual practice. But you have to be in a position to be able to judge that. You can't use that as an excuse for not sharing something. Yeah, like, I have this precious something, and it's going to be bad for your spiritual practice if I give it to you. So I'll just keep it myself. Not like that. Okay, then 42, is not ensuring the welfare of your following or not working for the welfare of your circle of friends, disciples, servants, and so forth. So this misdeed is not caring for your following. So if you're in the role of being a teacher or a leader, then you should care for the students or the disciples. So to look after them with the Dharma teachings and to look after them with material if they are not able to provide that, because they're poor. So again, this means you don't give them everything they want. Your responsibility is to give them food, clothing, a bed, a shelter, medicine. It doesn't mean fulfill their every desire and need, okay? Because those are endless. So if we don't take care of, the people who are depending on us like that, then it becomes a transgression, okay? If we do so out of anger or animosity, something like that, some very strong klesha, some very strong affliction, okay? So there's some exceptions to this. So this comes in the Vinaya, actually, too. If you ordain somebody, then you're responsible for giving them the Dharma and giving them the four requisites, providing that for them. Yeah. Some teachers take that seriously. Many teachers nowadays do not. Yeah, here we take that seriously. And so that's one of the reasons why we're very careful about who ordains here, to make sure that we can also fulfill our part of the bargain. Okay, so exceptions are if we're ill, or if that person is already under the care of somebody else who can help them. Okay. Also, if it would be better for that person, for their spiritual practice, if we don't give them, a particular teaching or such a particular material support. So you might say, well, how would that be good for somebody's practice, to not give them a certain teaching? Well, maybe what they want to hear is not what they need to hear. They're asking for some advanced practice, whereas what they really need to hear is something basic. So it's not doing them a favor to teach them the advanced practice, which may make them confused when what they need is something basic. Yeah? And similarly, if you know, people do not take care of the things that you give them well, if they're very reckless with that and waste the monastic resources, then I don't think you're, you know, it's important to keep on supplying them with one thing after another if they don't take care of what they have already. Okay. Another exception is when giving them something would conflict with monastic rules. Yeah. And so it's quite important, you know, in a monastic community that everybody's treated in an equal way. Yeah, more or less equal. Of course, it never looks equal from our point of view. Yeah, it always looks like somebody's getting more of something that we should actually have. But of course, you treat different people in different ways according to where they're at and what they need. Yeah, but, you know, somebody should not play favorites and give certain things to somebody they like and deprive somebody they don't like of what they need. Okay, so some other exceptions. Our followers are sufficiently wealthy or capable of finding what they need themselves. Okay? In that kind of condition, situation, you don't need to provide for them. I remember once when I was living in Singapore, there was one woman, she was not from Singapore, but she called and she asked if she could borrow money from me. And I was like, I had never heard of that kind of thing before, you know. So I asked some of the other lay students, you know, what they thought about that. They were equally shocked. And they actually told this person, you know, we will loan you money. But she didn't take it from them. You know, it was a very strange situation, so I really had to back away. You know, something did not seem right about the whole thing. And I think she could provide for herself. Okay, also another exception is they have already received instructions on the teaching topic. Furthermore, they know it well and are capable of practicing accordingly. So also, you know, there may be somebody who asks you for a certain teaching or advice on a certain topic, but you've been giving that advice and you've been giving that teaching in a public forum, so they've heard the teachings, they've heard the antidotes that apply to their problem, but they're coming and pulling and saying, please teach me this, please teach me this, but they've already heard it, but they haven't listened to what they've heard, they haven't put it into practice. Yeah. So in that kind of situation, it's fair to say to them, you know, please go back and review what you've heard and practice what you've heard. And after you've practiced it, if you still have questions or don't understand something, then, you know, come and ask. Okay. Another exception, if the intention of those people asking for instructions is questionable, okay, so maybe somebody comes from another spiritual tradition, they're asking you for teachings on something so that they can take it back to their own spiritual tradition. I remember when I was living in Seattle, what was it? Some of the monks were there. You know, doing the mandalas and things, and they had given a medicine Buddha initiation, and somebody who wasn't a Buddhist called and asked me if I would teach them how to do the medicine Buddha practice so they could take it back to their group, their non-Buddhist group, and teach it to the people there. And I had to say no, yeah, because this person... the motivation wasn't correct. They didn't have refuge in the three jewels. They wanted to use it as, you know, something. The motivation was just very, yeah. So I had to say, I'm very sorry, I can't do that. Another thing is, like, if the people request the teaching and you know that they plan to use it to earn their livelihood, yeah, so they want to make themselves into big teachers, so they ask you for the teaching, then they have it, then they can go out and teach other people and collect a lot of offerings, then it's fair to turn down their request. Or if they're going to use the teaching to criticize Buddhism, you know, maybe they're people who want to go proselytize in the Tibetan community, so they ask you to teach them some Dharma principles, so then they can go into the Tibetan community and criticize these principles and say it's all, you know, hocus pocus. Yeah, I get hokey pokey and hocus pocus, but, you know. So somebody who wants to go in, you know, and there's plenty of people like that, you know, who are missionaries, who are political operatives. They want to go in and gain power over people who are Buddhist. So they ask you to teach them something so they can go in and criticize it. Yeah. So, of course, there too, it's fine to decline. Okay, then 43 is not adjusting to others' thinking. So it's under the category of behaving wrongly with regard to living in harmony. So not adjusting to others' thinking, or not acting in accordance with the wishes of others if doing so does not bring harm to yourself or others. So does that mean that you always do what others want? You know, as long as it doesn't hurt them as you, or you, does it always mean that you just, you know, do what they want? That's not what it's talking about here, okay? It's talking about trying to harmonize our behavior with the people that we live with, especially our Dharma companions. So it could apply in a monastery, it could apply in a Dharma center, yeah. It could apply with a group of Dharma friends or wherever, possibly in a family too. But to try as much as we can to harmonize our behavior with the behavior of the Dharma group. Yeah. So that's assuming that the behavior of the Dharma group is good. If if the behavior of the teacher and the Dharma students is not, then it's better to go somewhere else. Okay. But here it's, you know, you're with people who are sincerely practicing. Then we try to harmonize our behavior with theirs. In other words, we don't want to stick out in the group with special demands. I need this, I need that. I don't do this, I will do that. You know, doing this job is below my pay grade, but, you know, you're not being paid anyway. You know, like, people like me don't do this, so somebody else can do it. You know, and things like that we all do, right? You know, when we just don't want to cooperate. Yeah, I've been asked to do that many times. So-and-so, you never ask so-and-so to do it. How come you always ask me? Yeah, so that kind of behavior. Yeah, you know what it is? Yeah, we hear it all the time, don't we? Yeah, how come so-and-so gets to do this? I don't get to do it. It sounds like a bunch of kids in a family, doesn't it? So, like that. So instead, to really try and live in harmony, live peacefully with the other people that we live with. So that means, yeah, that we have to say to ourselves very clearly, I am not going to get everything I want. And to say to ourselves very clearly, not everybody is going to do things the way I want them to do things. I want all the cups upside down. Yeah. This is not my private house. I cannot dictate to everybody whether the cups are right side up or upside down. You know, I have to realize that it's in the eye of the cup holder. And each cup holder has their own reason for either putting it upside down or putting it right side up in the cupboard. You know, and if I'm going to have a fit, there might be better things to have fits about than the cups. Yeah. You know how it is? The little things that just people do that drive us totally buggy, you know? And every little thing we feel like we have to comment on. So you know what I'm going to comment on today that I've really been fed up with for a long time? I'm just so fed up and people are so uncooperative. Every time I walk up those stairs on that side with that brown carpeting, they're filthy. Doesn't anybody in this joint vacuum the carpet? You walk up it. Go walk up it. I just walked up. Little pieces of this, little pieces of that. And it's brown, it doesn't even show the dirt, so you're only seeing the white stuff. You followed me, didn't you see all that stuff? Sprinkled around, yeah. Nobody cleans up this joint. Yeah, they expect me to do it. Okay? So, you know, I could go on a 15-minute rant about how filthy those stairs are. Yeah. And they are dirty. And you really need to clean them. And what's it going to be the result of my 15-minute rant about the stairs? What? Misery for me. That's exactly it. Nobody will go vacuum. They'll turn around to me and they'll say, you want them clean, you clean them. How dare they speak to me that way? Yeah. But they do. And I can tell them to shut up and they don't listen to that either. Human beings. You know? So, I mean, this is it, isn't it? Yeah? We can either make a big deal about everything we don't like, or we can, what is it they say? You pick your battles. Yeah. Yeah. You realize you can't control everything everybody does. So you choose the things that are really against the precepts, or really against our in-house guidelines, or really damaging to the community. You choose those things. Otherwise, you're going to go crazy. And the people living with you will as well. Yeah? But it's so tempting, isn't it? It's just a little thing. And they should be more mindful. Shouldn't they? They should be more mindful. I mean, we're studying mindfulness. You're agreeing with me. You're nodding your head. We're trying to practice mindfulness. And then these people, they are not mindful. And they just do this, and they just do that. I'm tired. Yeah? So isn't it my job to correct them? Isn't it my job? Like, who in the world put this carpeting in here without any pad underneath it? So that when people walk on it, the people downstairs hear them walk. Who in the world decided to do that? No, I didn't. It wasn't me. It was you. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, We should tear the carpeting up and put a pad under it. Yeah? Yeah. Yeah. Hmm? Yeah, okay. Yeah. So we need carpeting up there. Yeah. Who was the person who decided to put stuff up there? The people who were allergic to carpeting. They didn't want carpeting because they're allergic to it. They wanted stuff that goes clickety-clack, you know. So we could put a rug on top of it, and then you don't go clickety-clack. But they didn't want carpeting. I think they're fine. Yeah. Yeah. If we put regular carpeting upstairs, people would complain about the carpeting. Constantly. Definitely. Yes. Yeah, because it not only the smell of the carpeting, but it has all the dust mites in it. Yes. Yeah. And put it with the, what do you call it? The laminated stuff, because that's far healthier. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, it's... This is samsara, isn't it? Yeah. And you see, you know, one of the sufferings of samsara is, you know, not being able to get what you want. And look at the level, the microscopic level that appears at, you know, that I ponder that carpeting every time I walk up it. It wasn't just this evening. It's every time I walk up that carpeting, you know, and it's dirty all the time. Oh, yes, you're right. You're right. It's, yeah, because how can I concentrate on writing a book when that carpet's dirty and I'm worrying about it being dirty? Yeah, and I'm thinking about the Dharma training of all those people who will not clean it. You know, how afflicted they are by self-centeredness. So I really have to teach them more about cherishing others and not being so self-centered, and how that manifests in vacuuming the carpet. Yeah. Everybody's. Yes. I'm an indiscriminate blamer. What is it? Equal opportunity blamer. Well, I did, and my eyes are bad. So if I can see the dirt, then you know it's really bad. Oh. Yeah. Oh. Okay, so you see how important it is to try and harmonize our mind with others? So clean the carpet. Okay, where were we? Not adjusting to others' thinking. Okay, so... Yeah. And so this can be dicey, because sometimes what others want you to do, yeah, is you know it's not good, but you don't want to have a fight with that person. So you just say, okay. So in some situations, that's valuable, because what the fight is going to be over is something that's not a big deal. But sometimes somebody's doing something that is really not too cool, and it warrants somebody saying something, but you're all chicken. Oh, now I can get on you for that too. Yeah, a bunch of chickens here. Yeah, they will complain when they don't get what they want, but when somebody's not following the guidelines, they will not offer that person advice. That's interesting, isn't it? When they don't get what they want, and complain, they don't worry whether people like them or not. If I want something, I will complain and I will do whatever it takes to get it, whether people like me or not. But when somebody else is doing something that's damaging to the group, I don't want to say anything to them because they may get mad at me. And I don't want somebody getting mad at me for that reason. If they get mad at me because I want something and they don't want to give it to me, I don't care. But if they get mad at me because I'm actually trying to help, then I care a lot. Stupid. 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 Okay, so there are some exceptions. I know we're all looking for the exceptions. Yeah, can't I have, what are the exceptions so I can not harmonize with the people I'm around? Okay, when the people want us, when what the people want us to do will not be good for them and could very well harm them. Yeah? So, not following what they want or adjusting to their thinking, you know, is good. John McCain did it. Yeah, he gets the credit, but it's actually Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins. Yeah, so those are the people who, you know, willing to suffer something, but stand up for what they believe in and what's right and what will benefit people. Okay. Another exception is if doing it would harm us. Okay. Or if what they want may do them good, but would not suit a larger group of people. Okay. So one person in the community is, you know, on the war path about one thing, but if you let that person do that, and you go ahead with what they want, then the whole rest of the community is going to rebel. Yeah, so that's not so good. Okay, so when it would go against the wishes of the majority, then we should abstain from it to prevent that kind of hostile reactions. Okay. Another exception is if it's to respect monastic precepts or guidelines. So, you know, somebody is, you're visiting your family and they want to take you out to the bar. Yeah, or they want to take you out, they want to take you to Vegas for the weekend so you can have a good time. Okay. Yeah. Oh, not to be, you're not going to go gambling, you're just going to be in Vegas doing something, you know. So if it's, you know, going to infringe on keeping your monastic precepts, if it's going to look bad to other people, can you imagine monastics in Vegas on the strip going to the... Whew. So, actually, yeah, in Singapore, there was one monk who... because they have casinos in Singapore. The Singaporeans have to pay at least $100 to go, right? The foreigners can go free. Yeah, because they want the foreigners to lose their money, but not the Singaporeans. But there was one monk who was going into the gym or doing something. Do you remember what it was? You don't remember. Venerable Damcho remembers. But he, you know, yeah, he was in the casino for, you know, of course it has a gym and a pool and these things. But it just wasn't so cool. Yeah. So I have to confess, this is something funny. So a few years ago, there was a, you know, Gonzaga has a conference every few years on hate. They have a hate studies program, you know, that studies hate, why people hate. And so they were having a whole conference. And so I went one day, I think I did, I don't know, I did something. And, you know, so it was in, it wasn't in the gambling part of the casino. It was, you know, near the airport, the big casino. So they have conferences there. So it was in the conference room part of the casino. And, you know, and then Bill Miller was picking me up. And this is at a time when Bill Miller had his red sports car. And so I was waiting out in front of the casino. And this married man with a red sports car picks me up. It was Mariana's sports car. Yeah, so Bill and I were laughing and laughing about this. Yeah.
Uh-huh. My family went to Vegas. And when I was over to visit, they were telling me that while they were walking on this strip or somewhere around there, they saw someone who was dressed in robes, like red and yellow. And they this person purported to be a real monk and was asking for alms and donations. And, you know, well, you can tell what kinds of questions I was getting from my family when they, you know, after that, and I was trying to explain to them that I didn't think that a serious practitioner, monastic practitioner, would be out there in the strip, you know, or anywhere near there asking for alms. So, but it was kind of hard to explain.
Yeah. But there's been talk, it's happened in New York as well, and Singapore, it happens often. And these people are usually not monastics. They're dressing up, you know, and doing this in order to get some profit. So it's extremely negative karma, you know, to pretend to be a monastic and receive donations from people who have faith when you're not one.
And the sad thing was that, of course, they were thinking about me and became, you know, felt sympathetic for the person. Uh-huh. And they, I think they told me that they gave a donation or so. Mm. So that was kind of sad.
Yeah. Yeah. It's difficult. Difficult. Nice that they were sympathetic towards the person, but not so good that the person was most likely phony baloney. Okay, so another exception to doing that is if it serves to subdue the non-Buddhists or if it will help draw other people away from wrongdoing and encourage them to lead better lives. Okay. How are we doing? Okay, then number 46 is not praising good qualities. So this is behaving badly in relation to those who have good qualities. Okay. So when people have good qualities, you know, either spiritual knowledge or realizations or kind, you know, human qualities or that are very valuable or they have good values or principles or they just do something well, then we should acknowledge that. Yeah? So if instead of acknowledging it, we're angry, we're jealous, you know, and we don't want to acknowledge somebody else's good qualities or praise them because we're afraid if we praise them, then we're losing out. It's like if I praise them, then it makes them better than me and it makes me inferior and so I can't stand to do that. Okay, so actually, praising others should be part of our Dharma practice. And if you make it part of your practice, you can feel really happy because it feels nice to praise other people. You know, when we have to, point out people's faults to them, that's not so pleasant. But when we can actually praise them for what they do well, then they're happy and we're happy. Yeah. And I think it's an important part of our practice to be able to do that because it really works against pride and it works against jealousy. Yeah. So to really train our mind to praise those who are worthy of praise. You know. Now, of course, if it makes them feel uncomfortable, then don't do that because you don't want to make somebody feel uncomfortable. But it's... if you see somebody even working hard in their practice or trying hard or slowly expanding their mind or dealing with, something that's been hard for them, then it's very good to comment on that and give them support and encouragement. So the thing with this is, like with everything else, we think that other people should practice this more in relationship to us. Yeah. Because they don't appreciate my good qualities and they don't appreciate everything I've done. And, they really should appreciate that more. Yeah. And it's part of their Dharma practice to praise others. So why aren't they doing their Dharma practice and appreciating my good qualities after all I do for them? After how hard I've struggled to develop these qualities and they don't appreciate them. Yeah, so that's the way we are. Yeah. So this precept, it's like the talk on working with anger. It's not meant for your companions. Yeah, it's meant for us. For us to learn to praise others, for us to train our mind to see others' good qualities and point those good qualities out, for us to encourage other people, yeah, instead of always picking at them. And, again, you see why these things, they're so helpful on a day-to-day basis, aren't they? I mean, they're just talking about our day-to-day interactions with people. Huh? And so trying to have a good attitude towards other people, and it makes us feel happier when we do. When all we do is look around and pick faults, we feel miserable. So when I was talking to Venerable Sangha Kadra this afternoon, I was telling her that... years ago, because, when we sat in ordination order, I would look up the line and pick faults with each person who was senior to me. And I would look down the line and pick faults with each person who was junior to me. Yeah. So even whether I said it to them or not, in my mind, it was like, this one does this, and this one does that, and that one does that. And me, I'm very good. And that person does that, and that does that, that. Yeah? And like how miserable I was with that kind of attitude. And it got to a point where I couldn't bear the misery, and so I really had to start to make myself change, and train myself that, because why was I picking faults at everybody? Because I was jealous because they had good qualities I didn't have. Yeah. It was plain old jealousy. Yeah. But I didn't recognize it as jealousy. Yeah. I had to actually look at it and say, this is jealousy. And experience the pain of jealousy to be able to then say, okay, each person has a good quality and I need to learn to appreciate that quality. Because it's good that there's a variety of people who all have different good qualities. Yeah? If just because I don't have that quality, it meant nobody in the world should have it, then the whole world would really be in a big jam. So to be able to really look and appreciate people's qualities. And so I found when I actually trained my mind to do that, I was so much happier. Yeah, so much happier. So there's no misdeed if we're too sick to express our appreciation, or if the people are in the middle of a conversation, something like that. So we don't have to interrupt people in order to praise them. Okay. So if people don't have any desire for our acclaim, or if we know that it would make them feel comfortable, then again, don't praise them or don't praise them in public. And praising others does not mean you praise them for qualities that they do not have. So this is not a precept encouraging people to lie. You know, that clearly would be not beneficial. It's okay to abstain from praising someone if you hope to help them tame their own mind, okay, or to respect monastic rules, or to subdue, some non-Buddhists, or if we suspect that by praising somebody, it might encourage their arrogance. Yeah, then it's okay not to praise them. Okay, so now, this is a precept that everybody likes. Not correcting others. Yeah, so it's a fault not to correct others. Okay, now, good, I want to hear this one. You know, because now I can have all the juice for correcting others that I want to, because it's a fault not to. Okay, so it's not actually like that. It's correcting people who are acting against the Dharma, not correcting people who are doing something that's very harmful and damaging. Okay, so when the situation calls for it. Yeah, so here it says, not acting with whatever means are necessary according to the circumstances to stop someone from doing harmful actions. Okay, so if it's a situation where you have the ability to stop somebody who's doing harmful actions, either they're harming themselves or they're harming others, yeah, but you don't intervene and try and help, then it's a transgression. Okay, so when out of anger or animosity or jealousy or arrogance or whatever, we don't scold people, yeah, who need to be scolded, or expel people who need to be expelled, yeah, or give advice to people who are not following the precepts or not keeping the guidelines. If we don't do that, we are transgressing this bodhisattva precept, okay? So again, this doesn't mean we go around correcting everybody, but if there's a situation where what somebody is doing is clearly harmful to themselves or others, then it's a transgression if we don't offer them some help and try and reverse their behavior. Okay, so, even in Vinaya, there's a whole set of things there's banishing people, there's expelling them, there's suspending them. I mean, sometimes there's quite drastic measures taken for people who are really, acting totally crazy, in the sense of breaking precepts, bringing dishonor to the community, and so on. And so there's all these things of what you have to do if somebody is acting like that. So it's saying, if you don't do that and you let somebody continue to do something that is creating a lot of negative karma for themselves or harming the community or disgracing the Dharma, yeah, and you just say, I'm angry, or they're going to get angry at me, or, whatever, then that's not acceptable. Okay? So this mainly concerns, monastic communities, but it could apply to Dharma centers too. If somebody is behaving in a way that's very detrimental to the Dharma, maybe they're spreading rumors, they're spreading false gossip, they're accusing people of doing horrible things that those people have never done, you know. Or, you know, somebody is sleeping around with many people, or they're taking, you know, what's the word? Not extorting, embezzling. Yeah, they're embezzling money from the center, you know, or wasting things. Then it's important to actually say something. Okay, so here they said, first we should subdue our own anger, okay, so we don't like blow up in their face, yeah, but then we need to say something to them. So we try say something in a nice way. If that doesn't work, then we need to reprimand them a little bit more forcefully, yeah, and if that doesn't work, then you really need to, you know, sometimes tell the person they need to leave. Or do whatever else is necessary to subdue that person. Okay, and so sometimes, unfortunately, that happens. Yeah? Where, yeah, you need to do something like that. And so it's best not to wait till it gets to a really dire situation, you know, a really, really difficult situation. Okay, exceptions are when we're waiting for the right moment to act and that right moment hasn't come, okay? Or when the people who have misbehaved are so angry that you can't say anything to them because they won't listen to you. Yeah, so in that kind of situation too, there's no fault if you don't act. Or also, if the person sees their mistake and they feel a great deal of remorse and they're making amends, then you don't need to step in and correct them because they're already in the process of doing that for themselves. Okay. If we sense that correcting the people would lead to quarrels, verbal abuse, fist fights, and eventually to litigation, then there's no problem with not correcting them. And if we believe that it would cause a disturbance and a schism in the monastic community, then not problems in doing something. Okay. Then the last one, yeah, not using miraculous powers, if you possess them, to stop others from doing destructive actions. This is one I keep. Okay, so not repressing wrongdoers and so forth by paranormal powers. Okay, so if somebody is doing something harmful, and you have those kind of paranormal powers or supernormal powers, and there's a way that you can use them to stop the person from doing something harmful, then, you know, if you don't use them to do that, then that it's a transgression. Yeah. But again, that doesn't mean that there's permission to go around using your supernormal powers for, you know, getting a lot of fame and distinction and so on. Okay, so this precept concerns only people who have those powers, not the rest of us. Okay, so questions, comments?
I just wonder if you happen to know stories from the Buddha's time about two things that come to mind from these. One was, I read about Chana. Chana
is the charioteer.
And I was surprised to hear that in the Buddha's deathbed is when he had to offer this admonition and injunction for Chana, where the community didn't speak to him.
Mm-hmm.
I would just wonder if you knew about that. And the other is there seems to be some about like fist fights or this and that, but I've never heard any stories about the Buddha's monks or nuns of that time involving that. All I've heard stories more about that related maybe to the ignorance of when those monks killed themselves because they were mistaking the meditation guidelines or things related to attachment, but I've never heard any
stories related to attachment.
I've heard stories of the monks and nuns at the Buddha's time that related to attachment, but I've never really heard stories. You know, we have vows for this about people getting in fights.
Oh, yeah.
There were?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, well, first of all, you have the monks from Kosambi who were so argumentative. You know, and the Buddha had to say, "Ciao, fellas, you know, I'm going to the forest to meditate." Because these guys wouldn't listen to anything. They're just fighting each other. When you look at each of our precepts, you know, we have precepts not to drag people out of their room by, you know, why is there the precept not to drag somebody out? Yeah, because it happened. So there's a lot of precepts like that where people were just really behave very rudely and obnoxiously towards other people. Yeah, lots of them. They're in the stories about, if you read the origin stories for the precepts, those stories are right there. Yeah? So-and-so did this and that and, you know, slug somebody or drag them out of the room or, no, there's lots of stories about people doing things out of, you know, violent things and being angry. Yeah. Yeah, read the Vinaya. Yeah. And there's stories also of people being, you can't imagine being incredibly rude to the Buddha. Just, you know, maybe not physically violent, but just like, wow, how could anybody treat somebody like the Buddha like that? Yeah, so very, very hostile.
Someone's asked, does 45 apply to everyday non-Dhamma situations as well?
Okay, so that's... 45 is not...
harmonizing.
Not harmonizing, yeah. I mean, no, that's harmonizing one. It's the one about not correcting, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, so somebody's acting in contrary to the Dharma. Yeah, I mean, so if somebody is doing something harmful to themselves or others, yeah, and we're able to step in and intervene and stop the situation, then we should do it. Okay. Again, this doesn't mean we go around correcting everybody. Yeah. We're talking about where somebody's doing something, you know, very damaging. Okay. So if you're the parent of a teenager, good luck. Yeah. Very difficult being the parent of a teenager. When do you say something? When do you not say something?
For 45, I think you said the last exception was it would cause a schism in the monastic community.
Yeah.
So I could see that happening if somebody is really misbehaving and then, you know, other people either support that person or want to do the same behavior and someone wants to correct it and then they know that will cause a split. What do you do? You can't just overlook that behavior.
Yeah, then you need to somehow be a little bit more skillful. Yeah, and maybe take some of the people aside and talk to them, you know, wait for the right moment, figure out the right way or another way to say something to somebody so that they don't all go bonkers, you know. Or maybe if there's a whole contingent there, you know, like the fighting in the White House that's going on, you know, you have all these different cliques. And so maybe you have to separate some of the people who are in these cliques. So you send them to a different monastery. Yeah, you send them somewhere else. Try and diffuse the situation and then be able to talk to whoever you need to talk to.
Venerable, I have a question about number 42, not working for the welfare of your circle of friends and disciples and servants.
Yeah.
If... by helping them, you could also, you can help them, but you could also possibly injure yourself in the process. Are you then
Yeah, I mean, it's helping them by giving the Dharma or giving them material aid if they need it. Yeah, I'm not sure how giving them material aid. I mean, if giving them material aid would mean you don't eat, you know, then you think of another way to go about doing this. Yeah.
And you mentioned if the intention is questionable, and I wanted some elaboration on that one.
Well, if the other person is asking you for something and you think their intention is not quite so sincere, yeah, that there's something funny going on, then it's fine to not give them whatever it is. Yeah. These things are all really practical, yeah, and you can see how all of them are hitting against our self-centered thought. You know, the self-centered thought that, you know, doesn't like somebody and wants, is jealous, wants them to suffer, or, you know, we're attached to our stuff. And, you know, so you can see it's all about daily life interactions, isn't it? You know, these situations happen a lot. And so these particular ones here, the ethics of benefiting others is quite important.
What I've noticed more in these last two sessions, I'm going through those more than I've seen before, is how also how discerning wisdom is a part of it, because how easily you could be tricked into thinking that you have the right motivation, or I could anyway. So, you know, mm-hmm. to spend some really serious time discerning where am I coming from when I'm trying to do these things.
Right, exactly. And so it's very helpful with each one of these to make situations that we've either encountered in our life or that we've heard about or read about, and then think, you know, how would I act in that situation, or how could I go about keeping this precept in that situation, you know, and what situations are exceptions, what situations where are they, where I really have to overcome my own self-centeredness. Yeah. So making lots of examples.
I have to fess up that with a lot of these, my self-centered thought says it's just too much trouble. Too much time. Too much. I mean, there's a part of me that will go and put her little toe in one of these to help. But if there's a little bit more of me asked to be invested in something, I have sometimes at certain levels, and it's not that it's being unrealistic about what people are asking me to do, is that I just say, I don't want to. Mm-hmm. There's the self-centered thought goes into a form of laziness. It's just too much trouble.
Yeah.
You know, this is taking a lot longer than I thought. Their struggle is taking a lot longer, or the inconvenience, or their sickness is taking, whatever, you know, it's taking too much time.
Yeah.
When I reflect on each of these, I think often that I sometimes won't do something because I'm not so clear about it, or sometimes I'll do something because I'm not so clear about it, and either way, it's kind of a mess, and so it just reminds me that every day to retake my bodhisattva precepts is really helpful and really important, because these are difficult. They're not simple. Mm-hmm. They're very difficult to do for me anyhow.
Yeah. And it's also going to be like everything else. We fall down and then we learn from our mistakes and we pick ourselves up and we go on. Yeah. And to also not hold ourselves to some impossible standard of, I've got to get it right, where who knows what in the world right is. Yeah. But to do what we're able to do, and also realize that we're not here to save the world. Yeah. So it's not like we have to, you know, go over the top for everything to show how compassionate we are, you know. It's not that either.
I just wanted to know if we can get t-shirts that say our self-centeredness has been fired as chief of staff from our West Wing and is now under new management.
Yeah. That would be great for a t-shirt, wouldn't it? Yeah. Yeah, I like that. Self-centeredness has been fired. The conventional eye is under new management. Okay, good.